Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And Caroline, I am honestly surprised that it has taken us this long to talk about office romance.
I know. I mean, it ties in so many different aspects of things we talk about. Gender, love, sex, romance, age groups,
workplace. First of all, Caroline, I gotta ask you, I'm sure the listeners are wondering, have you ever gotten involved with an office romance?
I have not. No, I have not. I do know plenty of people, though, who have. And when I say that, I just mean when I worked at the newspaper, pretty much everybody was married or dating or
something. Each other, you mean?
Yes. Yes. That's a key component of the discussion we're having today. No, but I have never, I've never dated anybody at work.
The closest I've gotten to dipping my pen in the company ink, as some call it, is when I was in high school. I was a counselor at a day camp, and I ended up kissing another counselor. It was after the camp was over, so we weren't, you know, it wasn't distracting us from our camp duties.
Okay, well, I mean, geez, Kristen, if you're going to go back that far, I have to amend my statement.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I worked in a, when I was a teenager, I worked in a kitchen at a clubhouse at this club place, country club type place.
Okay.
And I was a little waitress, little teen waitress.
Oh.
And I was just absolutely smitten with one of the chore boys.
And y'all canoodled?
There was a little bit of teen canoodling.
Yeah, in my adult life, I've never gotten involved with an office romance. Although for fans of How Stuff Works, I will say, and I'm not going to name names, even though it's all happy news, but I do know for a fact that there are at least three marriages that I know of that have come out of this How Stuff Works office.
Hmm. Do any of them still work here?
I'm not going to name names, but yeah, so for people our age, though, Caroline, for the millennial generation, this idea of office romance is pretty accepted, even though I feel like all of the advice that I heard growing up was don't do it, steer clear of workplace romance. But in fact, according to a poll conducted by Workplace Options, 84% of 18 to 29-year-olds said that they would date a coworker.
Yeah, that's a huge chunk. That's not insignificant. And I think more interestingly, 40% said they would date a boss versus just 12% of older workers who said they would. But there's also the aspect of like how it's all viewed. 71% of millennials see workplace romance as having positive effects, such as improved performance and morale. So that's not just being neutral and being like, oh, I like this person, maybe we can date. It's like actually seeing workplace romance as a positive thing versus, I don't know, maybe our parents' generation and older who thought that was a no-no.
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly take more time with my hair in the morning if I had a sweetheart in the cubicle next door or something like that.
Yeah, actually, speaking to the Wall Street Journal, Janet Lever, who is a professor of sociology at California State University, Los Angeles, and a longtime researcher of these office romance dynamics, said that the office is often cited as the number one place for us to meet a potential partner, which considering especially the workplace today, mm-hmm. where I feel like the 40-hour work week is pretty much obsolete, work now invades our lives in more ways than ever before. And since career is so central to both men's and women's lives, mm-hmm. it's like we're there more than any other place. So why not meet somebody there?
Yeah, I mean, you end up having so much in common. But I wonder if it's like any more in common for some people than just complaining about the boss or, you know, some people actually develop like really strong connections at work because, yeah, like you said, you are spending so much time there.
Yeah. And you know who made a really special connection at their workplace at a law office a long
Ooh.
Time ago? Barack and Michelle Obama.
Really?
Yeah. They first met at work. And according to a Career Builder survey, 1 in 5 people who've had office romances ended up marrying that special somebody.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. So it doesn't always end poorly.
Right.
With the office romance thing. And it's not so uncommon, too, that there is maybe a broader acceptance among millennials for office romance because by this point it is so deeply permeated in our pop culture. I mean, Pam and Jim. On mm-hmm. The Office. Hello.
And Leslie Knope.
Yeah, exactly. Leslie and Adam Scott, mm-hmm. who are, I think they might be my favorite workplace couple. I'm smiling now.
You got a little gushy.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was there.
Yeah, well, there's other movies like The Best of Everything from 1959. And let's not forget 9 to 5 in 1980. Well, that was less of like a romance and more of sexual harassment.
Yeah, definitely the tone of office romance and pop culture has evolved from the late 18th and early 19th century with postcards when we first have women coming into the office where it's more a warning that, oh no, women are in the office and so men are going to take notice and then there's going to be a lot of skirt chasing. And then you have things like Pulp Fiction and Playboy pictorials and cartoons depicting things like the sexy secretary. And then this notion of the office wife. There's actually a movie called The Office Wife that comes out in 1930. So at first, the notion of office romance was more of just office adultery, really.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, I feel like, you know, Pam and Jim and Leslie Knope and Adam Scott are examples of how it's become a lot more normalized and also how because those women are pretty much on par at work with the men,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more of a wholesome, sweet aspect to it.
Right. Now, as far as like real life office romances, a lot of different companies and different generations also, as we've touched on, have different views on it. I worked for a small company that did not actually have a rule, hard and fast written rule about it. But it was strongly discouraged. Although, I mean, it was mostly women, but there were like 3 guys in the office and the CEO was like, don't you go preying on these weak female employees, men.
Yeah. And there were some articles at Kiplinger, CNN, Money, and Inc. looking into why office romances are sometimes frowned upon by people like your boss and other business owners. And there are 2 main reasons for this. There's first of all something called amplification of potential liability. Essentially, you have coworkers getting involved with each other, kind of bring their personal life into the workplace, and that could set you up for lawsuits possibly down the road, especially if it's a superior dating someone in a lower rung who could say after the breakup or after the relationship dissolves, maybe that person, the subordinate might say, well, I'm not getting good assignments anymore. This person is retaliating against me, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole office gossip aspect.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Right. That can really derail a lot of work going on. I mean, in a lot of the articles we read, they would interview people, and a lot of the women, we'll definitely get to the gender aspect of this, but a lot of the women would say, you know, I would get the side eye going down the hall because people were talking about me because I had, you know, chosen to date a coworker.
Yeah, and that can certainly affect the office environment when you have people whispering and wondering whether or not people are dating, possibly trading favors, etc., which is why there are a number of companies that now have written policies barring particularly the superior subordinate relationships to prevent things like favoritism or accusations of favoritism, as well as retribution. And some just have anti-fraternization policies, which is basically the stuff of like, don't date anybody. Come on.
Right. Well, I mean, there's something that's a little more concrete called a Cupid contract or something like a love contract, where companies have both parties sign contracts saying that you're going into this relationship, you know, willingly. You're not being forced into any sort of creepy sexual relationship with a coworker. But also, it's to protect all of you. And by all of you, I mean you, the person you're dating, and the company, all of you, from lawsuits and any claims of, you know, like we said, favoritism or discrimination.
Yeah, and there are some HR departments that if you go to them and say, hey, so-and-so and I are dating, they'll say, okay, but they will reserve the right to transfer one or both positions to a different reporting line in case, especially, again, if it's that superior-subordinate relationship, if anything starts to get a little dicey. But mm-hmm. most small companies have zero policy on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot more common for employers with a lot of younger employees to adopt a neutral stance on office romance. So you've got smaller companies, or you maybe just have up-and-coming companies that have a lot of young employees, and it hasn't been implemented yet. And I mean, that could be that they don't care, or it could be that, you know, they just haven't gotten to the point where it's become an issue.
And the thing is, though, when it comes to office romance, the people who, and this is confirmed anecdotally and from studies and research, is that the people who tend to bear the brunt of things like that office gossip and those negative environmental issues, it's usually the women.
Right. Yeah, the typical view of an office romance from people from the outside, according to Peggy Drexler in April 2013, is basically that men are doing it for either love or to stroke their ego, while women are doing it to get ahead and take advantage of that situation to be promoted or get some better assignments. And a 2009 study from the Western Journal of Communication found that while most employees do have a negative perception of workplace romances,
that anger is more widely directed toward women.
Yeah, and supporting that, there was a 2012 study that Drexler cited that was in the journal Sex Roles, which found that, hey, women are more likely than men to be the targets of office gossip. And I have a feeling that it does continually relate back to that notion that while men might be out for ego, women are out to climb that ladder using their best assets. And I'm talking about sex.
Right. They're feminine wiles.
Yes, yes.
So regardless of the reason that people are getting involved in the office, sex with bosses, executives in particular, really does happen. According to a Center for Work-Life Policy study, 34% of female executives said they knew a woman who'd had an affair with her boss, and 15% copped to being that woman.
And even though I have a feeling that the 15% of female executives who said that they were that woman who had had an affair with a boss, I wonder how many of them would say that they were doing it purely to get ahead. I mean, it's such a pervasive notion because in that same survey, it found that specifically when it comes to assumptions about junior women having sex with senior men in organizations, it found that 60% of male executives, and even more, 65% of female executives expected salary hikes and favoritism being exchanged for that sex. So I wonder if the fact that there are maybe more female executives saying, yeah, there's probably some favoritism going on, maybe they're speaking from some kind of experience. Maybe it's because sometimes women judge women even more harshly in the workplace, which is something that we've talked about. But nevertheless, it's a tough thing to talk about because I'm sure that there are some women who do it. I've had conversations myself with younger women who have said, sure, I would use sex to climb the career ladder, to which I said, I will change the subject now.
I mean, it's pretty sticky territory, obviously, because, I mean, we mentioned gossip and we mentioned bad feelings and accusations of favoritism, but it really does kind of poison the environment when people are making assumptions about why you're doing it. From that same Center for Work-Life Policy study, 61% of men and 70% of women said that they lose respect for a leader who gets involved in an affair. And when that boss, when that senior person is a man and the junior person involved in the affair is a woman, that can really make it difficult for a lot of women going forward because, I mean, this is coming from a Bloomberg piece in 2010 where they were writing basically about how if we are junior in a company, regardless of our gender, we need people to help us. We need people to be mentors, to sponsor us. And that often takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You're probably spending a lot of time together. You're learning from one another. The senior person is maybe taking you to lunch or to dinner to get to know each other better. But, I mean, a male executive might be a lot less likely to do that if his predecessors have really mucked it up by getting involved or just being accused of being involved with younger women.
Exactly. I mean, I can imagine if he is a married man in a position, in a leadership position, you would want to protect yourself from negative perceptions that might come from people just assuming that if you put a man and a woman in a room together, a heterosexual man and a woman in a room together, that something is just going to have to happen. It's like we're circling back to when Harry met Sally at some point. And I will go on the record as saying that I in no way endorse using sex to climb the career ladder. I think that it ultimately hurts everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it really never turns out well. That's different from, say, a Pam and Jim kind of thing of like dating in the office. Yeah, that's fine. I don't really think that as long as you're smart about it, as long as you are able to separate work responsibilities from the dating responsibilities. I think, for instance, it helps if you are maybe in different departments, aren't working side by side every day.
Yeah. Well, two of the couples in particular at the newspaper that I was referring to, both sets of couples worked in the same department as each other. So, like, there were two writers who were married and one was a sports writer and one was a copy editor, but they were on the exact same side of the room. So
maybe,
but all if, in very close quarters.
But if they're married, though, I feel like that's different right. from a dating couple.
One couple did get married later. They had been dating up until that point. But I think, like, I totally agree with you. And I think that as long as couples aren't like, ooh, smoochy, smoochy in the office all the time, then it's more acceptable.
But what do you think, though, about this issue of specifically using sex as a tool to get ahead?
I mean, it's despicable.
Yeah. But why do you think, even though we have 29% of men, more men saying that they'd be cool dating a boss than women who say they'd be cool dating a boss, why do you think that the perception is still, like, the negative perception is still largely focused on women?
Because the societal perception of women is still that we are wily and using our curves and whatever to get ahead in anything, you yeah. know, to get out of a parking ticket. You know, I mean, this is just the way that women are perceived in the context of office romances is just an extension of how women are perceived in pretty much any social interaction, which is manipulative and, you know, using that push-up bra to get ahead.
Yeah, using sex essentially as our only commodity, sex right. and bodies, which then links back to, you know, about the gaze and the objectification and all of this, which is about to launch me into, like, gender studies 101. But Julie Berbitsky actually spent a lot of time looking into these dynamics in terms of sexism and sex in the office. She wrote a book, Sex in the Office, A History of Gender, Power and Desire, and looks at the history of women in the workplace in the past 150 years and how that intersects with exactly what you're talking about, Caroline, that societal idea that women basically are just constantly selling sex in one form or another. And she concludes that 150 years after women in the 1860s first started taking office jobs at the U.S. Treasury in the United States. That was one of the first offices to employ women. She concludes that relatively little has changed in terms of our broader attitudes towards sex in the office. Specifically, that we still have a persistent belief that women use and lie about sex, and that we have a persistent belief that access to women in the workplace is a natural perk for successful businessmen.
I mean, things have changed for the better, for the most part. I mean, I doubt there are very many offices where the male boss is still chasing around the secretary, chasing her around the desk, you know, like trying to pinch her butt and all that stuff. We do have sexual harassment laws, and we do have more female executives among our ranks. And so that's good, right?
I mean, that is good, but the Equal Employment Opportunity Office that monitors things like sexual harassment complaints, they still receive between 11 and 12,000 complaints per year regarding sexual harassment. So, I mean, it's definitely still pervasive. And the whole thing about women executives, one thing that popped into my head when I saw this was that now we're starting to see, if we're talking about pop culture, now we're starting to see this, like, more playful attitude regarding powerful women suit chasing younger male employees, kind of like on The New Girl. For anyone who watches The New Girl out there, there's this character Schmidt, and he works in an office, and his female superiors sometimes want to have sex with him, and he, you know, and it's like this comedic haha funny thing, but you know, it's still, I don't know that that's a sign of progress. Like, all right, now we're at the top and we can be equally inappropriate. Great.
We can harass each other equally.
Well, and the thing is, though, and Berbitsky talks about this in Sex in the Office, it's this larger idea that men are powerless against their sexuality. Women walked into the office place, you know, 150 years ago, and everyone freaked out because of this antiquated notion that men can't control themselves, which is a total and complete insult, first of all, to men. And she said, though, at the same time, our concepts of women's sexuality have been in flux from that idea of, you know, the Victorian virginal innocent to, then all of a sudden we have, you know, the other end of the spectrum, the conniving being tramp. So women have often been perceived as the guardians of their own sexuality, you know, not using it for evil, but also as the guardians of men's sexuality. And what has this done for all of us? Nothing good.
Yeah, I mean, it's that idea that boys will be boys. Oh, men. They're hilarious.
And how infantilizing is that?
Right.
We're even calling them boys in that regard. I think that, I mean, it's so easy to say that there's not enough, you know, protection from sexual harassment for women. And absolutely, like, those kind of laws need to be in place. The EEOC needs to be arguably more aggressive with pursuing complaints like that. But we also, at the same time, need to do boys and men a favor of, you know, getting rid of that now just antiquated idea that it's somehow like totally out of their control. No.
Well, I think it's surprising and not. Like, that's what I always say. I always say it's surprising and not about things like this. It's surprising and yet not that it took until 1975 for the term sexual harassment to even come around. I mean, feminists coined that term to finally put language to those unwanted sexual suggestions, jokes, or sexual coercion that had taken place in the office for ages. I mean, when you think about, like, if you've ever had to go to, like, sexual harassment training for your work or for your school or for anything like that, it is kind of funny, to think about how long it took. You know, and then it wasn't that long ago that that term even came about.
Yeah, and it wasn't until 1986 that the Supreme Court ruled that unwelcome actions constituted a form of sex discrimination in violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which essentially helped pave the way for sexual harassment policies and laws really being enforced in workplaces.
Right, but I mean... I guess I get so frustrated that it took that long for people to be like, oh, wait, so women in the office don't just exist for men to look at and flirt with.
Well, listen to this. Berbinsky talks about in Sex in the Office how in the late 19th century, many businessmen made it a rule to never be alone with a typewriter, as in a woman who would come in and type on a typewriter, because she might be a quote-unquote adventuress with evil designs.
Again, that sounds exciting.
So even though in the workplace she has no power, there's still this idea that sex does give us that one power. It's like the one thing that we've got. I didn't know, by the way, that I was going to end up speaking so passionately about this. Because
yeah,
it's like one of those onion kind of topics,
right,
where you start to peel it away and peel it away and peel it away. And you're like, oh, wait, there is so much more connected to this.
Yeah. It is funny, though, about that first generation of women who entered the office back in the 1860s, because the view of them was so complex. Because if you were a good middle class woman, well, gosh, you wouldn't go to work. You'd be at home. You'd be raising babies. You'd be, you know, sewing your clothes. You wouldn't be at an office making money. That's tacky.
Well, and the whole thing of, like, if you were attractive enough, then you'd probably be married off. Or you would get married to your job.
I mean, that's another stereotype that exists today.
Either sleeping your way to the top or winning ugly.
Right. Like, you're obviously like, okay, well, you had to give up on the love thing because you're not attractive enough. That's why you're so good at your career.
And the thing is, though, I do think that while a lot of this is painting a very dismal portrait of women in the office, it is a reality of stereotypes that we do still face. I think it's getting a lot better. And I do think that women in leadership absolutely help. But there's still a lot of progress to be made.
Sure. And I mean, not to completely like brush aside everything we were just talking about, but taking it back to just plain office romance.
Yeah.
I mean, we did talk about how our generation, the millennial generation, has such a different perspective than possibly the slightly older generations, you know. What do you think that's going to mean going forward? Do you think, I mean, is work just going to become our lives? Are we just going to start, I mean, is work just going to become the home? Are we going to be bringing our babies and our dogs and our husbands to work with us?
Well, no, I think that we're going to be taking our work to our home where our dogs and...
Where our spouse is, who we met at work back when we worked in an office.
No, we probably would have met the spouse on OkCupid or some kind of online dating. No, but I'm glad you bring it, that you do circle it back to that generational difference, because here's a positive theory. Perhaps that maybe the more normalized positive view that we have of office romance is a signal that maybe those old stereotypes are starting to really fall by the wayside.
Right. The fact that nobody automatically assumes that a woman in an office romance is exploiting the man's power, and that a man in an office romance is not exploiting a woman's sexuality.
Yeah, that office romance doesn't necessarily signal affair, signal conniving, signal someone just using their bodies to get to the top.
Right.
So maybe it's a good thing that we, and I say we speaking for the entire millennial generation, that Pam and Jim and Leslie Knope and everybody else have made office romance more acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, still be smart about it.
Absolutely.
You know, make sure you check your motivations before you wreck your something that rhymes with motivations. And don't go after the boss or anything for any weird reasons.
Yeah. I think, well, there is such a distinct line in this podcast between office romance and office sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big difference there. So for this one, definitely want to hear, as always, from listeners out there, because I am sure that there is a diversity of experiences, both in terms of sweet stories. Did you meet your honey pie at the office? Let us know that. And also, have you experienced more of those negative sides of office not so romance? Let us know, momstuff@discovery.com. And Caroline, we didn't even touch on all those trend stories about office spouses. That's another topic for another time, I think.
That is. I have a friend who constantly refers to her office spouse, and it's not cute. They're friends, but the man's wife actually really, really hates it.
Yeah, if we need to do an episode on office spouse, because that's non-sexual,
right,
relations at the workplace, let us know if you want that too. We can certainly follow up. MomStuffAtDiscovery.com is where you can send all of your letters, or you can tweet us at MomStuffPodcast, or send us a note over on Facebook and like us while you're at it. And while you are digesting all of this information we have given you about office romance, let's take a quick break.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
And now, back to some letters.
So, Caroline, I was going through the Stuff Mom Never Told You inbox, catching up on some old letters, because you know what? Sometimes the inbox gets a little backed up, and I apologize for that. But I wanted to share a couple of older emails from our episode about hair color, which I thought were a lot of fun. So, Margaret, first of all, writes in saying, "Hi, Kristen and Caroline. I just wanted to chime in on your recent podcast on hair color and whether or not blondes have more fun. I grew up blonde in the United States, and when I was younger, people would frequently comment on my light blonde hair. However, I am now living in Sweden, and the perspective on blonde hair here is very different. As you might imagine, blonde hair is very common here. Unlike in the States, where people attempt to become bottle blondes, in Sweden, I am much more likely to see people trying to get rid of their natural blonde hair to become brunettes or redheads. For me, it's very interesting to see what is considered an exciting hair color here, as it is so different from what I was used to in the United States. It's strange and funny that the light blonde hair that people commented on frequently in my childhood is now, more often than not, seen as common or boring." So thanks, Margaret.
I have one here from Christy. She's representing the redheads. She says, "I'm a proud redhead. I've been told many different myths about my hair, ranging from I have no soul, to my hair makes me feisty, to I'm only a redhead to be noticed and I'm more likely to have a threesome." Yeah, the last one is baffling. For me, the issue is less one of discrimination. People are enamored with my hair. Strangers feel the need to grope my head or make me promise to never destroy the color. They seem to believe it's on the same level as a pregnant woman's stomach. To make it worse, my father loves golden retrievers with the redder color. The fact that I match my dogs baffles strangers. Some would go as far as putting my hair on the dog's head. When I was a child, I did face discrimination. My niece is also a redhead and faces the same problem. She's constantly bullied at school because of it. As an impressionable child, she wants to be like everyone else. In many ways, she'll learn that having fiery locks is good, but in a society that emphasizes similarity, she won't learn that until she's old enough to embrace her unique attributes. Luckily, she has me as a shining example of ginger pride. So I think that's great, Christy. I have a redhead niece, and I hope she also embraces her ginger pride as well. So thank you.
And thanks to everyone who's written in to momstuff@discovery.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast and keep up with us on Facebook as well and Tumblr at stuffmomnevertoldyou.tumblr.com. And don't forget that you can watch us as well 4 times a week on YouTube. So head over to youtube.com/stuffmomnevertoldyou. And don't forget to subscribe.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.